Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job's not just to entertain, but to educate and teach, put it in context. Call me, 1-800-743-CNBC, or tweet me, @JimCramer. All right. What more did we want from Apple, for heaven's sake? As I predicted, when the world's largest company announced a whole slate of new products and services today, the stock got hammered, and that weakness reverberated throughout the market. Dow only inching up just 15 points, but it was down most of the day. S&P dipping 0.08%, NASDAQ climbing 0.07%. I'm putting Apple in for one of the reasons why that happened. Honestly, there was nothing Apple could do to stem the decline. You know what? Its stock actually held up surprisingly well, given that nothing was ever going to be good enough for the bears. Haters going to hate, right? Although when it was down 3 and change, bargain hunters came in to take it back up down only $2.31. That's a minor victory, all things considered. Now, last week I told you that Apple needed to double down on its service business because the service revenue stream is the future. But there are tons of money managers who want Apple to focus on fancy, high-tech gizmos. And these people are always going to be disappointed by a bunch of new services that they consider to be boring and pedestrian. Sure enough, Apple rolled out a bunch of boring and pedestrian services. Okay, they didn't seem very sexy, even though I think they could be very profitable. There's Apple News Plus, which bundles together subscriptions to more than 300 newspapers and magazines, including the LA Times, Wall Street Journal, for just $9.99 a month. Okay, that's an incredible value proposition. I looked at my bill that came this weekend. It came on Saturday night around 9:30. It said, I spend $32.99 a month for the journal alone. I say, sign me up. Apple's going to save me a fortune. I'll also get the Apple credit card because why not? It's a better deal than what I'm getting currently. I'm downloading that as soon as we finish taping. I'd cut my old card in half on the show if I weren't afraid that you'd see my number. And you better believe I'm canceling my HBO and Showtime subscriptions once I can get them through Apple TV Plus streaming system. Oh, and their new video game streaming service gives them a nice back door in one of the hottest markets around. News, television, finance, gaming, all in one. Yet to the super rich analysts, it's a yawner. They don't much really understand how Apple saving people money because it doesn't mean anything to them. Of course, the stock rolled over because these are all, like I said, pedestrian applications. That's crazy. Yeah, not to be too philosophical, but sadly, much of life is prosaic. And if Apple services can make your life a little easier and save you some money, I say game on. Apple's credit card gives you cash back on a daily basis. My current card only gives me points. My wife takes the points. What is that all about? We don't need no stinking points. With Apple, you get 2% cash back instantly, 3% for the purchases on the App Store with no late fees. I love a credit card that doesn't expire because when it expires, I mean, is it a real bummer you got to put in your number everywhere? It's like, oh, Amazon, this, it's, it's a waste of an afternoon. How about the TV service? I don't mind paying Apple what it wants for this bundle. And more importantly, you won't have to pay them for what you don't want. You know, there's like 580 channels. I like four of them. Sounds like it could save you a fortune, especially on HBO and ESPN+, both of which I'm already paying for. I just want to use Siri to put on HBO. I'm also intrigued by the morning show Apple's putting together with Steve Carell, because I love him. Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, that's okay. Hey, but they got Oprah, and she's unstoppable. While I don't play video games, my wife does. She'll want that Apple Arcade service, another money saver for people who like this stuff. And my wife plays a game every night before she goes to bed. She'll love it. That said, these are all services for the 99% of America, not the 1%. And to the analysts who are part of the 1%, these perks mean nothing. I mean, they don't care about saving a little extra money. It's like they've never been to a dollar store either. They want Apple to change the world, not save you maybe $100 a month. But to most Americans, $100 a month is godsend. So what did Wall Street want to see? Well, they wanted to see some kind of blockbuster announcements that would get the stock roaring. So what did they do? I'm going to give you what they wanted, okay? First, the critics wanted Apple to spend more on streaming so that it could rival Netflix. That means shelling out $50 billion. That's the amount that that Netflix has spent on programming, supposedly. Or they could buy Viacom and CBS, put them back together, make television programs and movies while also getting NFL and March Madness. I bet Apple could snap them up both for $40 billion. OK, that way they can develop all sorts of content, no longer buy back stock or raise a dividend. What else? The last time I interviewed Tim Cook, he talked about how healthcare would be his legacy. Millions of people can be saved if Apple can link its watch to software that handles electronic medical records. So if Apple wants to dominate healthcare, they need to buy Cerner, the top purveyor of electronic medical records, is public. That's an $18 billion company. Maybe they need to pay $23 billion. That deal would revolutionize healthcare. At the same time, there are plenty of other opportunities. When it comes to diabetes, it's Dexcom that makes the best glucose monitor. I know they're affiliated with Google, but Apple can buy them. Or Tandem Diabetes makes the best insulin pump. You can pair those two devices, create an artificial pancreas. I bet Apple could steal both those for $20 billion. All right? And add them all up to get $83 billion worth of acquisitions. That's what the analysts want. If Apple did these deals, they could convert many of the analysts into believers. And that would get the stock moving right here, right now. But honestly, I'm perfectly happy with what the company's doing here. Actually, more than happy. Nothing it presented today resonated with people who don't bother to look at their cable bill each month or don't check their Apple bill. But I bet they'll resonate with many consumers, the 99%. And that, not the Wall Street analysts who want Apple to spend tens of billions of dollars. That's what they think about, the people think about. It's what Tim Cook thinks about. That and the off-mentioned privacy issues that he cares compassionately about. You know what? Throughout the presentation, whenever it went dark, I thought that was Facebook looming Darth Vader-like against Luke Cook Skywalker. Which brings me back to what Apple really needs to do here. It has become more of a service company that makes the best cell phones. You know, sometimes I actually, in like wildest dreams, think that they should give away the phone and then charge you a certain amount for them every month, along with what they charge you for all these subscription services they rolled out today. That would get the customers and the analysts excited. Wouldn't it be nice? Might even convince some firms to start covering Apple as a consumer products company like Procter & Gamble or Colgate, which I think is the right way to evaluate it. Of course, they're low tech. This is high tech. Now, Apple obviously wasn't the only thing that controlled today's narrative. We had some more fallout from that inverted yield curve. The yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury drifted lower. Weighed on the stock market. That's a flashing neon sign screaming recession. But I don't think we're going to have recession. And I say that as someone who was sounding the alarm during the economy's fourth quarter when Fed Chief Jerome Powell was talking about hitting us with 3 rate hikes this year. Ill-advised. We saw more selling today as money managers are raising cash to prepare for the big onslaught of IPOs. They don't get enough new money in to participate with these deals without ringing the register on something else. So they're dumping high-flying stocks like Salesforce, like ServiceNow, like Workday, in order to get in the likes of like Lyft and Uber. I know the trade negotiations with China are more important than ever, and it seems like there's no real deal on the horizon. The hardliners keep insisting that the tariffs stay on, even after we've come to some kind of agreement, and that's a very tough sell for China. Plus, this Brexit thing continues to freak people out, for good reason. We have no idea what's going to happen. Remember Fred Smith in that Federal Express interview last week? Holy cow. But the bottom line, in the end, today was Apple Day, and as much as I like all the bells and whistles, I know the Wall Street jackals were not appeased. They wanted a game changer that cost a fortune. Not a bunch of pedestrian incremental improvements. I think they're wrong, which is why I continue to say you need to own Apple, not trade it. Gregory in California. Gregory.
Hi, Jim.
Gregory, what's up?
I'm calling because I need the professor's help. But first, I want to tell you I'm a proud Action Alerts member.
Yes.
I want to thank you for your invaluable help. Your educational efforts really make a huge difference to people like
you.
Myself.
You know, I spend more time on the club than I do on anything, so I'm so glad you're a club member. How can I help?
I'm calling about Zora.
Zura.
Ticker symbol ZUO. They reported earnings last week, and I don't think they're quite ready to be one of your cloud kings or princes yet. But I know I've been following them since you had the CEO on, and you know what? I've done my own research. They were in line with their earnings per share. They won out on revenues, and they got slammed in the after
hours. You know what?
You
know what? First of all, Gregory, thank you for those incredible kind comments about ActionAlertsPlus.com. We'd love everybody to remember. I agree with you. I was on the Zuro call not just because he mentioned my name. Thank you, Teen Sue. But because I really felt that it wasn't a bad quarter. There's that very big short position. People leaned on it. Sarge, who writes to me, Sarge Guilfoyle, he and I both like it. I would unhesitatingly buy Zuro. Zuro does make it so that you can have a great subscription economy. I am with Gregory. Now I'm going to go down to Ed in Florida. Ed.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Ed.
Professor Jim Cramer.
Man,
you
I got tenured tonight. What's up?
You and your team, I want to thank all of you for everything you do for us home gamers. You guys are the best.
I do. This is the single best team ever. I was telling my wife last night that Regina Gilgan, who was on vacation last week, is back. My executive producer, who will step. She looks like but, you know, we miss Regina because she is so good. The team is so great. Thank you for mentioning it. Most people don't talk about the team. I'm a team. Is there an iron team? No. Okay. What can we do?
Some spelling
problems in this group here.
I've been watching your show for years, and it's one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life.
Man, and you rock.
You guys are fantastic.
And
I got to tell you, recently I've been really looking at my stocks, my portfolio, and I've earned and I've learned from you guys,
especially you
and your book. You guys are great.
Oh,
I wish you'd come down
here
to Boynton Beach, Florida, and have a book signing. I would go to it again.
East Florida, my friend Bowers Espy's down there. How can I help?
I'm looking at Lowe's, L-O-W, and I know that they changed to Marvin Ellis, and he used to be with Home Depot. In fact, he was with J.C. Penney for a bit, and he came to Lowe's, and I think he's doing a really good job.
I disagree with you. I think he's doing a great job, and that's why I think buying Lowe's ahead of what's basically the Christmas for Lowe's, which is coming up in 3 weeks, will be brilliant. Marv is going store by store by store to fix the customer experience, and he has done a remarkable job. Boy, do they ever need to do updating. So I am with you, Ed, in Florida. Thank you for saying all those good things about our group. Now I'm going to go to local. I'm going to go to Jim in New York. Jim!
First, I just want to thank you for bringing us Mad Money and Cramerica.
Wow!
You love it.
I was down this weekend. Now I'm back up.
Hey, Jim, isn't this the new electric age? You know, electric vehicles, EV.
Right.
Move over Tesla. I count no more, no less than 9 new EV entries coming into the U.S., from big name auto companies in the overseas in 2019. And GM just announced a new EV production facility in the U.S.
Right.
And then there are the other product needs for batteries, everything from rechargeable household goods and mobile phones to battery storage from renewable energy sources.
Right.
Now, all of this requires a significant upswing in battery production, which equates to a lot more lithium, right?
Right.
So why is ALB with a 13 PE such a dog? Is this an opportunity?
Okay, well, here's
the
problem.
Market?
I mean, you could also go to Sociedad Química, which is a company in Chile. The problem here is that anything connected with autos is
the house of pain.
So I don't want you involved. Anything connected with autos is disappointing, and that's no good. Let's stay away from that, even though your work is good in theory, in conception. But the reality is these companies can't make the numbers. Okay, today was Apple's day, and Wall Street just wasn't happy. The hell with them! They're wrong! I made money tonight. Thermo Fisher just announced it was getting gene therapy with a $1.7 billion acquisition. What does it mean for the overall market? I got the CEO. Then Nike dribbled past estimates in its latest quarter, but the stock still took a hit. Can it pick itself up and keep running, or has it lost its energy? Pegasystems sells some of the biggest businesses on the planet, run leaner and meaner. Can its stock whip your portfolio into shape? It's been a pretty good one. I'm sitting down with the CEO. So I am urging you to stay with Apple and stay.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact. Smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
We keep hearing about the rise of individualized medicine, how biotech and pharma companies are coming up with ways to treat all sorts of ailments via gene therapies or immunotherapies that are uniquely tailored to each patient. We've seen a series of major deals in this space, and today we got another one. Thermo Fisher Scientific, a company you know we like, the maker of advanced medical equipment, it's basically an arms dealer to the pharma and biotech group, if you want to call it that, and that's what it's buying Brammer Bio. It's a leading gene therapy company for $1.7 billion in cash. Now, Thermo Fisher is a gigantic $107 billion business, but I think this deal tells us a lot about where they see the industry headed in the next 5 to 10 years. Do not take it from me, though. Let's check in with Mark Casper, the president and CEO of Thermo Fisher Scientific, to learn more about the deal and his company's prospects. Mr. Casper, welcome. At the Mad Money. Good to see you, Mark. Have a
Jim,
seat.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely, man. You have been just doing so well. And I didn't know you, of course, you'd make the acquisition. But if you could put it in context, because we've had so many companies in immunotherapy, and I was thinking they can't, judging by this Brammer business ramp, they must be dependent on Brammer tremendously.
So, Jim, this is a very exciting space. The pharmaceutical and biotech industry is really excited about gene therapy and the immunotherapies because it's making a huge difference for patients. And one of the big challenges is manufacturing capacity for bringing up these medicines to the market. And Brammer Bio has really carved out a leading position as a contract developer and manufacturer of these therapies.
Now, what will it mean in terms of trying to win business, say, from Danaher, where Danaher just bought GE's life science business, which is good. I don't think it's as good as yours, but are you guys going to go head-to-head?
Yeah, from our perspective, you know, as the industry leader, we keep building out our capabilities, and we have over $10 billion of our revenue is to the pharmaceutical and biotech industry today, and Brammer is really a business that will help us have great growth in the future in serving their needs.
So should we be thinking about Brammer as a when IPOs come out for biotech, or is it when Lilly buys a biotech company, or when Glaxo buys a biotech, or Novartis, because they're all doing it?
Yeah, so the customer base will be both large cap and the emerging companies. And that's one of the great things about Thermo Fisher Scientific is that we serve the whole range of the industry and help the young companies get started. But we also help the large companies as they shift towards new modalities of medicine.
I think it's important to point out that there are some companies that China can't do without. When I see your numbers in China, I mean, I just imagine you're in those Shanghai hospitals with 500,000 people each one. I mean, that's a fabulous growth business for you.
Right. One of the key elements of our growth strategy has been our strength in emerging markets.
Right.
China, the second largest market for the company, 10% of our revenue. Last year grew 20% organically. The reason for that is the government priorities of expanding health care for the population, controlling pollution, improving food safety. Those are things that we enable for them.
But I think it's also important to point out that you are a company of great strictures and ethics, and there's some business you have turned down because you feel that some people have been discriminated against.
Yeah, you know, with our technologies, they really are for good purposes, right? And they enable our customers to make the world healthier, cleaner, and safer. But there are times that technologies can be used for other purposes. And in one particular case, we got a set of facts, we evaluated it, and we made a decision that we would discontinue the sale.
And this is gene screening, to be fair, and it's something that none of us would like to see in our country. I know that. When you talk about $1 billion you invested in R&D last year, what are you getting for that?
Yeah, so we have a really exciting portfolio of products that come out of that very large R&D investment. One area that we're excited in is precision medicine, and our sequencers have done really well in helping doctors identify the right therapy for an individual specific type of cancer. So that's an area that's really been a focus for us in terms of R&D.
Do you think it's too small that these immunotherapy, some people tell me, Jim, don't get caught up in the bubble. Some of these illnesses are for 500 people and 1,000 people. Mm-hmm.
Right, but the medicines are curative, right? And that's the thing that's super exciting, which is the market, the individual rare diseases can be small, but these are patients that don't have really any prospects without these great breakthroughs, and we're enabling that, and that's super exciting.
I'm going to say this for you. You can hold your ears because you probably don't want to hear, but you are the best acquirer I have ever seen. All of your acquisitions pay off. Even the big one, the one that puts you together. What's your secret, since so many people tell me the technology acquisitions always fail?
Yeah, so we have a very disciplined process and a great team. And what we really understand is, can we add value to a business? And most things we look at, we pass. But the ones that we are convinced that we're the right owner. And our track record is very strong in terms of creating value.
Well, and strong, so people know, is when you see not just revenues additive by buying the revenues, but by the organic revenue growth. And you've got high single digit. A lot of people don't have that.
Yeah, last year we grew our business 8% organically.
That's fantastic.
And, you know, all of the major acquisitions that we've done over the years, we've accelerated their growth meaningfully, taking businesses that were growing below the company average, and now they're growing well above the company average.
I want to ask you something that philosophically worries a lot of people, including the president and his people. They think that China may be passing us. When I hear they're buying all this equipment, I wonder whether we can rival China, given how much they're spending.
Yeah, in terms of where the breakthrough science is coming today, it's coming from the U.S.
Okay.
It really is. In terms of the pharmaceutical industry, biotech, I mean, there's a cluster. Really what you're seeing, the application of these technologies in China, is to bring up the standard of living in society in China. And you're seeing it for reducing pollution, improving food safety, you know, expanding basic health care to the population. So, you know, the U.S. and the NIH and the National Institutes of Health is really a gem in terms of this industry.
All right, that's terrific. It's very funny. I know we got to go, but David Faber and he saw that I had you tonight. He says, that guy really knows how to run a business. That's a great company. You really are. Thermo Fisher's a fabulous company. That's Mark Casper, President and CEO of Thermo Fisher. Timo, if you haven't, it's a $100 billion company, people, and it deserves to trade even much higher. That's how good they are. Mad Money's back after the break. It's time to pick through the rubble of Friday's sell-off. Take Nike, which reported on Thursday night and then tumbled 6.6% on Friday. If you simply looked at the action, you'd think that the sneaker king could report a lousy quarter. I mean, how could the stock fall so much if the quarter was any good, right? Wrong. This is one of those cases, like the movie Unforgiven, where deserves got nothing to do with it. When you actually go over Nike's quarter, as I did this weekend, it becomes clear that Nike's doing pretty darn well. It was an overreaction. I like these numbers. So why the heck did the stock get slammed? More importantly, why do I think it's worth buying into weakness? First of all, you need to understand that Nike had run up pretty dramatically going into the quarter. Like everything else, this one got crushed in the fourth quarter, pulling back to 66 at its lows in late December. Then Nike reported a great quarter, and the stock came roaring back, peaking at $88 and change last week, right before the quarter. It was a 33% run, which is a gigantic move for a mega cap company as a Dow stock, right? The thing is, While Nike's stock ran like a champion earlier this year, the rally happened on no real news. The stock never should have been down so much in the fourth quarter, so it kept levitating and levitating and levitating as analyst after analyst upgraded Nike. Those were good calls, but they didn't have any new information. Then the last couple weeks leading up to the quarter, we got more and more of these geniuses raising their price targets, just aggressively pushing the stock. They wanted to get behind it before the quarter. In short, the expectations had therefore gotten out of control because of all these upgrades and price target boosts. The problem with great expectations, aside from the fact that Dickens was paid by the word, so it was a little too verbose, if not prolix, is that this kind of thing makes it almost impossible to deliver a blowout quarter. That's what was at stake here. When the analysts raise the bar like that, people end up being a lot less impressed by even excellent results. That was really the schematic, the theme here. So what happened when Nike reported on Thursday night? Company delivered a 3-cent earnings beat off a 65-cent basis. Inline revenue up 7% year over year, 11% on a constant currency basis. So along with an expanding gross margin, right, what they make after cost of goods sold, it was up to 45.1% from 43.8% a year ago. That's fantastic. Nike benefits from higher average selling prices. Currency is finally starting to change in their favor. And their higher margin direct-to-consumer business, it's on fire. Nike's largest business, North America Footwear, up 9%, an acceleration versus the previous two quarters. How about their big Chinese business, something a lot of people were worried about because of the trade war? Well, it's phenomenal, with both footwear and apparel growing at 20% clip in Greater China. If we had a weaker dollar, something that I think could be in the cards, Nike's European business would have looked good, too. It was up double digits on a constant currency basis. Excuse me. What's driving the strength? Okay, CEO Mark Parker, whom I am a huge fan of, spent a lot of time on the conference call talking about technology. Now, some of that is about personalization. Nike now has the tech to churn out many versions of the same shoe using different colors or different materials, and that's bolstering sales of the classic footwear like Air Force One, Air Jordans. Company advanced tools allow them to bring new products to market faster, another major positive. They're also digitally tracking all of their products, which helps management more accurately match supply to demand worldwide. And by the way, you know, there's a secondary market for these sneakers. StockX, I mean, it's doing incredibly well because there's so much individualization. Now, some of it's also about digital. Nike's connecting with users via their app. People on the app are at their stores buy 40% more stuff than people not on the app. Plus, the company's digital business grew at a 36% clip. As Parker explained, the more we invest in stronger digital capabilities, the more growth opportunities we uncover. In other words, Nike's become a tech company masquerading as a sneaker company. All right, how about China? Everyone's so worried about China, right? Okay, the footwear and apparel business is booming as more and more Chinese people get involved with sports. Nike's working hand in hand with the Chinese Ministry of Sport. That's the place you want to be, right? Wouldn't you like to be the head of the Ministry of Sport? Okay, well, they're doing it to expand physical education in schools. They sponsor the Shanghai Marathon, the Chinese Super League. Hey, say what you want about the Chinese Communist Party. They want a healthier population, and they recognize that Nike can help them make that happen. That's why the company can seemingly shrug off the trade war, something that's done a lot of damage to many other U.S. brands with a lot of business in the People's Republic. Nike doesn't have any serious Chinese competition, which makes it perhaps the best American brand in the PRC when it comes to not worrying about somebody switching to a Chinese alternative. So why the heck did the stock get pulled off some Friday after all those positives I just gave it? Because of the guidance, which was broadly considered disappointing, even though I don't agree with that interpretation. Nike issues this guidance in more of a narrative format than most companies. Their calls read like a little bit like Mark Twain, frankly. I'm not kidding. Mark Twain. So let's try to parse what they said. First of all, CFO Andrew Campion, he explained that they're looking for high single-digit revenue growth on a constant currency basis, but low single-digit growth on a reported basis. That's weaker than the 6% number the analysts were expecting. Really, though, I think that's just Nike being cautious about exchange rates. If we get a weaker dollar, like I'm expecting, their revenue growth forecast may prove to be too conservative. For the 2020 fiscal year, he talked about high single-digit revenue growth, which is basically in line with expectations. No reason to sell. At the same time, Campion said he was looking for Nike's gross margin to expand, not contract, but expand by 75 basis points this quarter. It's more than the 130 basis point expansion last quarter because the company continues to make heavy investments. People don't like to hear investment. Remember, I told you that anytime I hear anyone says investment, they want to sell the stock. Well, that's why the stock got clobbered on Friday. But I got to tell you, I think Nike was simply doing what it always does. They underpromised so they can overdeliver the next time they report. company has an incredible long-term track record of beating Wall Street's earnings estimates, even though their sales occasionally disappoint. Of course, each time that's happened, it was a buy. Plus, Nike's being gutted by worries about the strong dollar, which hurts their ability to make money overseas. But management told us that this quarter, current quarter, would be the worst one in terms of foreign exchange. They expect things to get better going forward. I agree with them, especially now that the Federal Reserve has stopped its stupid tightening right in the face of a slowdown, something that should allow the dollar to weaken, providing a boost to the bottom line. I think this company has earned the benefit of the doubt from you, the benefit of the doubt. But even if you disagree, the facts are on Nike's side. Here's a company that's taking share and taking names in footwear. Once again, they've stopped resurging competitors like Under Armour, Adidas, in their tracks. That Adidas had taken a lot of share right back to Nike. They've got a fabulous digital business, creating a loyal base of online customers who buy out a limited sneaker launch in a matter of hours. What else? In recent years, Nike's had some trouble retaining its female customers, but on the conference call, they talked about how their women's business has reached an inflection point. The company's got tons of initiatives to win back these customers, and Mark Parker talks about the business as tremendous opportunity. He only mentioned women 30 times on the call. Between personalization and clothing for women, I thought Parker hit a home run. Put it all together, and I think the stock is relatively inexpensive here versus its cohort. Trading 27 times next year's earnings estimates. Hey, Under Armour's 43. Lululemon 33. I don't think they're as good as this company. Plus, this afternoon, Michael Avenatti just got arrested from trying to extort $20 million out of Nike. It couldn't happen to a nice guy. Stock briefly got hit and then rallied, which to me said, it's the bottom. Here's the bottom line. Nike only pulled back on Friday because its stock had run up dramatically going into the quarter. But the results were great. I'm telling you, they were great. I'm betting the guidance was a classic example of UPOD, which means Nike is a buy tomorrow morning right here. Can I speak to Sean in Illinois? Sean?
Hey, Jim. Hey, a hearty booyah to you from Chicagoland.
Oh, man, no kidding. I'll take Jordan Howard. I think with our offensive line, he'd be pretty good. That's the Eagle talk. What's up?
Thank you. Hey, Jim, thank you for your in-depth Priceless show that I've been watching for a few years now.
There you go. Thank you.
Hey, Jim, I had added a chunk of Tailored Brands, symbol TLRD, at a much higher price.
Oh, man, you know that's not that good an alpha, Sean. I mean, I wish I had something good to say. I have nothing good to say. So therefore, I mean, like my grandma told me, like Nana Mary told me, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say it. So you know what, Sean? I'm not going to say it. What a gentleman. Thank you, Nana Mary. She lived in 94. She was dynamite, like Jack Daniels every single day. That's how you live long. Let's go to Sal in Florida, please. Sal.
Jim, this is Sal from beautiful Boca Raton, Florida.
Boca Raton, man, you're done. I remember Larry Kudlow once said he was laid back in Boca Raton.
Come on down, Jim.
All right.
But Jim, I want to ask you, I've been ordering my clothes from Stitch Fix. I love the clothes, and I love the concept. Now, Jim, I was looking to purchase the stock. I want your opinion.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I think it's a great stock. That last quarter was good. The previous quarter was disappointing. I love the way they bounced back, and I welcome them on the show. It did sound like, though, Sal, candidly, that you were speaking from the bottom of a swimming pool. Okay, Nike's a buy. Just do it. By the way, the Kaepernick thing was a huge home run. Didn't even mention that. I had so much to say. Hey, much more mad money. Competition in the cloud might be heating up. Could a play like Pega? Pega Systems, pay. I'm taking a closer look at what's...
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
sets this company apart with the CEO. Then, trying to gauge the health of the U.S. economy, should you rely on the Labor Department, Commerce Department? No! I'll tell you why it all comes down to Chicken Alfredo. And all your calls, right front, tight decision, light around, stay with Kramer.
Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
You can't just eat one. They
what'd
are amazing.
What'd you eat?
I don't know, I had some sort of like kale chip or something.
Really?
It's not kale, but it is, it's so tasty.
And it makes you think it's healthy, even though it probably is.
I felt like Superman.
No kidding.
Yeah, well,
you look good.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Not every company needs to be first. Sometimes the biggest winners are older companies with the flexibility to adapt to major changes in their industry. Consider the rise of cloud computing. Once it became obvious that the cloud was the future, the legacy software companies had a choice. Either become disruptors by embracing the cloud or do nothing and be disrupted. The smart ones jumped on the cloud bandwagon. So take Pegasystems, PEGA, the software play that helps develop customer applications for other businesses. These guys are involved with everything from marketing to sales to customer relations management and business process optimization. Don't worry, we're going to explain all these. Now, Pegasus Systems is a 35-year-old company, but in recent years, they've gone all in on the cloud, and this transition has given them a gigantic boost. In the last 5 years, the stock has rallied 255%, trouncing the performance of the S&P 500. Last year, they rolled out Pega Infinity, their most comprehensive suite of cloud-based software yet, which is one reason the company gave such bullish guidance when it reported a little over a month ago. That's one reason why the stock is up 33% year to date. So can it keep climbing? Let's check in with Alan Treffler. He is the founder and CEO of Pegasystems to get a better sense of how his company's doing, where it's headed. Mr. Treffler, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, Alan. How are you?
Thank you, Jim.
Congratulations on the incredible results. I think I want to start something different today. I want to talk about how there's an outfit. It's called Gartner. And they have these magic quadrants. They have the quadrants. You are so far ahead of everybody else that I could see why you get Google, why you get Ford, why you get Anthem, why you get all the big banks. But I don't know if our viewers understand what a differentiator that is.
Well, you know, this is a set of industry analysts expert in what technology companies do. And they go through a rigorous process every 1 to 2 years and evaluate the companies and rate them.
Right.
And we consistently come out first. And there's two in particular I'm excited about. One, we're top in what's called intelligent business process management, which is taking work and doing work and making businesses more efficient and more agile. And the second is we're number one in what they call real-time interaction management, which is about making decisions. So you make the smart decisions, you execute the work, do great things for the business.
Okay, so for Google, they use you to improve site reliability. We count on Google's site reliability.
Yeah, it's amazing. Google controls about 25% of the internet traffic, which is mind-numbing. And to be selected and trusted by them to help them in that journey really says a lot about the mission-critical capabilities of our software.
Okay, before you came on, I checked around a number of people in the industry. Business process management, you are so far ahead of everybody else that it begs the question, how come more people don't know you? I mean, I know you because you've been on the show. But when I look at how dominant you are, I kind of feel like, well, why doesn't everybody know Pegasus?
Well, I think therein lies the opportunity.
Okay.
For a lot of years, we were very, very targeted in terms of who we offered our product to. We weren't very aggressive from a marketing point of view. We didn't have close to the number of feet on the street that you need to really engage organizations deeply. We are massively changing that.
Oh, that's great, because when I see your customers, you talked about in the conference call, right at the end, you just threw in that you've got this deal, a deal with a major European bank that is so big, RoboBank, which people just see, there's a good example. I know RoboBank is huge, and you just got an unbelievable deal with them. But I think people just say, well, I don't know, that's not a big. Tell them, people, how big that is.
Well, it's pretty big because it was, of course, highly contested.
Right.
And being able to get them.
Firms that we probably know.
Firms that you routinely have on this show.
Right.
And those are the firms we compete with and can be quite successfully, I would say. You know, if you want to hear.
Sure.
From a lot of the customers talking, hundreds of customers speaking about their stories, I'd invite you to come to PegaWorld. It's June 3 and 4 in Las Vegas, and it's going to be a tremendous show.
But read some of the names. I saw that there are companies that you are that are speaking, and every one of them is a good client, and they're all clients everybody knows.
Well, Vodafone, SiriusXM, which just selected us last year, ING, that major Dutch bank, where we're helping them really streamline a lot of their key processes. Firms like PayPal, National Australia Bank, which is undergoing a transformation, Cisco. We're really honored that these companies will come. And frankly, share their stories about how they're looking to transform their businesses.
Yeah, no, okay, so you're moving into CRM, all right? Well, and that's right up against Salesforce. Salesforce is a very powerful component, very powerful opponent. How do you go up against a Salesforce and win business?
Well, a couple of different things. Okay. One, we complement Salesforce in many settings. Because if you think about it, Salesforce very much presents a facade, a front end, that can present information.
Okay.
You got to hook that into the sort of execution of work. You know, how do you really go and fulfill that request for the customer? How do you really change their addresses on the 40 different systems that you need to? A major Salesforce customer like Unilever selected us new last year.
I didn't know that. I met with Paul Pullman about what he's doing with Salesforce. So he brought in Pegasystems too.
Because we do a good job of complementing them and actually getting work done. Now, some customers choose to use us all the way through, end to end, and we can operate in either fashion.
All right, one last question. Is it a hindrance that you're not out west?
You know, I believe that we need to break this mythology.
Okay, good. I'm glad I asked
about it. Silicon Valley is where inspiration comes from. I actually think it's terrific. You know, we have so many awesome universities, for example, in the Boston area.
Right.
You know, being adjacent to MIT, we have a talent pool that I think is both, frankly, richer, but also a lot more stable than what goes on at some of these high-tech companies.
That's my feeling. But I needed you to speak up against the mythology. I think that's terrific. That's Alan Trefler, founder and CEO of Pegasystems. These guys are just scorching it, guys. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time. It's time for the light. We're going to have goes running over here. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Dang, down for the lightning round. Kramer, I'm start with Mike in Florida. Mike.
Jimmy, I'm going with Moderna.
I like your choice. I think that they're going to be hard-pressed to be independent. That's how good their technology is. Now we're going to Larry in California. Larry.
Booyah, Jim. How's it going?
It's going just fine. Thank you for asking. How about you?
Terrific. Beautiful day in L.A.
I had no idea. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, listen, I wanted to ask you, Jim. A few weeks ago, I read an interesting story about Nielsen Holdings in Barron's.
Yeah, but to me, it wasn't that positive. I'm kind of concerned. They got a 5% yield, but their business is very, very, let's just say, tentative. So I'm not going to be attracted by that yield. Let's go to Ricardo in New York. Ricardo.
Hey, Jim, this is Ricardo, Long Island, New York. How are you?
I am doing well. How about you?
Good, good. All right, so I have the ticker symbol O. I wanted to know what you thought about that.
You know what? They're on fire. They're just one of these good, they're a good REIT. And they've been able to handle this period well, and they also do benefit from the decline in the interest that you get for treasury. I want to go to Dean Aaron in New Jersey. Dean Aaron.
Jimmy, big booyah from Jersey City, baby.
Right back at you.
Jimmy, my stock is Bristol Myers. Why is it stuck in the mud with CVS?
Well, because Bristol Myers is trying to buy Celgene, and we are big believers in Dr. Giovanni Caffaria. We think the plan is a good one. A lot of people saying bad things. I'm playing. He keeps putting out these things about the miracle drugs that Celgene has. I'm with Giovanni. How about Billy and Farpus, Billy?
Jim Cramer, how you doing?
Not bad, thank you for asking. How about you?
Good. I got to start by saying thanks for all your wisdom. I'm actually calling you right now from the Miami Open. I just got done watching Roger Federer play.
Can't beat that.
Yeah, you're the Roger Federer stocks, my friend.
Wow.
But my question, so I saw semiconductors jump last week. I had some FOMO, and I've watched them slide the last
few days. I know, we all have FOMO about the semis.
I missed out on that. I watched XLNX, and I know you like Micron, but I'm wondering how you feel.
No, I like Xilinx much more than Micron because it's got tremendous. It's the best 5G play there is. It was down a couple of bucks today. Buy Xilinx off of 5G. Let's go to David in Pennsylvania, please. David.
Hey, Kramer, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
good. I call you crazy smart, Kramer, because you're so wise.
Okay, I'll take that. No problem with that.
Listen, I want to know about WTI Offshore. What's your
opinion? No, you don't want to know about it. That is a total...
The house of pain.
I am not going to let you go to the oil patch. I don't care that it's advancing. It's too dangerous. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Commentators love talking about the macro, the big picture stuff, then generalizing about individual stocks because it's easier than doing the homework. And the macro gives you these great sound bites. You can pontificate about tax cuts, the inverted yield curve. Everybody takes you seriously. You get a couple, two heads going at it. You know, one guy's pro, one guy's anti. Too often, the macro will mislead you. Sometimes the big picture stuff is irrelevant, and it all comes down to a better bowl of pasta. Rather than focusing on these aggregate data points, I prefer following the largest companies and just listening to what they have to say. If they say business is good because taxes are lower, okay, great. If they say it's something else, then it's something else. Take Darden, the parent company of Olive Garden, and a bunch of other chains that require, you know, they reported a great quarter last week. I was genuinely surprised when I read the conference call transcript because Darden cited their new chicken Alfredo dish with 50% more chicken, not the tax cut, as the key driver behind their stellar 4.3% same-store sales growth. I like Darden, not just because I'm a huge Olive Garden fan myself. I love to go there with my vegetarian daughter. She's got a lot of things that she can eat. The truth is, Darden CEO Gene Lee has a terrific grasp of what's going on in the restaurant industry. And Lee says Darden's strength is all about innovative dishes like that new augmented chicken Alfredo I mentioned. As for tax policy, listen to what he says. He goes, I'm not really worried about year-over-year changes based on whether there is a little bit more tax money with the consumer when they're feeling strong, end quote. In other words, if you're looking at everything through the lens of Washington, which is what people do when they haven't done any homework, you're going to miss what's really happening in at least this industry, restaurants, along with a whole others. Look at all the chicken they put in the Alfredo. I mean, can you feel how heavy this is? Probably not, right? Okay, wait. I don't know. Anyway, Lee believes things could get even better. He tells us that, quote, wages are growing across all different parts of the population, end quote, something that should produce better returns for 2019. But wait, won't that translate into higher labor costs for Darden? Shouldn't we be terrified about wage inflation? Nope. Darden, much like Chipotle, saw labor as a percentage of costs go down year over year. How's that possible? These companies keep finding new ways to reduce their demand for labor. Oh, there's digitization. Both chains also cited lower turnover. Remember, when you bring in new workers, you need to train them, and it ends up costing a lot of money. If you can retain your best people, you end up generating more profits. That's always been the secret to Costco's success. Now Darden and Chipotle are equipped from the same playbook. Why does this matter? Because every time I see the futures get knocked down by Japanese selling or European weakness or Chinese things, I got to remind myself that America has a robust economy that's nowhere near going into recession. Believe me, if we were really in trouble, you would hear about it from the likes of Darden or Chipotle, not to mention Walmart, Costco, and Target. They said nothing of that sort. When you follow individual companies, you will have the confidence to buy their stocks into weakness when the whole market sells off, like we saw on Friday. Darden and Chipotle are doing great. Anytime they dip, it's a buying opportunity. Their management teams are creating value that won't be obliterated by endless political intrigue or Brexit or something else you might be worried about. So the next time the bears freak you out by fretting about how the sky is falling because of the inverted yield curve, just remember Olive Garden's never-ending bowl of pasta. And remember, never forget to wear your cargo pants so you can stuff them with these fabulous rolls on the way out. Stick with Kramer.
Take control of your financial future with the new MadMoney.CNBC.com. Kramer's exclusive CEO interviews, full episodes, analysis, even your own soundboard. Plus, special access to Mad Money 101 with rules and techniques to break down the market for all investors.
The red flag that makes me drop a stock immediately is...
It's everything you need right when you need it. The new MadMoney.CNBC.com.
Plenty of details still to work out when it comes to Apple's pricing. I know that. But the fact is that Tim Cook identifies both from privacy and from your pocketbook with you, with the 99% of America that wants to save money. Hey, by the way, I think that credit card's really cool. Like I say, there's always a bull market summer. I promise I'll fit just for you right here at Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.